Hey everyone, welcome to Turnbuckle Boogie. I am professional wrestling history enthusiast Timothy Styles. I always laugh when I say that fully out loud.
Yes.
And with me is professional wrestler and Las Vegas based trainer, Cutthroat Cody Hancock.
None other than I, sir. Hello, how are you?
I'm fantastic, buddy. How are you?
I am swell, swimming, great, grand, wonderful.
Happy post-Halloween. We're recording this before Halloween, but it'll come out after Halloween.
Yeah, and I will have a very big Halloween. I'll be in Washington defending the Future Stars of Wrestling Tag Team Championships for Without a Cause against the Bash Bros.
Ooh, here's the big question. Will he still have the titles when this airs?
Or will I have another championship along with Jacob Austin Young?
Oh, that only time will tell. Anyway, welcome to the show, folks. And before we start the show, I would quickly like to mention that if you care to support the show, the best way to do it is by going to turnbuckleboogie.com and hitting up our gimmick table. There's shirts and hoodies. And that's the best way to show your love. I'll feel warm inside, and I'm sure Cody will as well.
You might even feel warm outside with the hoodie.
God damn. These intros are always the worst. Anyway, go ahead and plug something before we start.
Cutthroatcody.com for all of my social media links, and be sure to visit my own page at Brainbuster Tees where you can buy stuff as well.
Yo, book this kid, son. Promoters out there who are looking for badass wrestlers.
Yes, sir. Badass singles wrestlers or tag teams, we're ready for you.
I can vouch for Cutthroat Cody.
Thank you, sir.
Let's boogie. Today's a weird day.
Why is it a weird day?
I don't know. I just felt down today. Every now and then, you just have those down days. You know.
Did you listen to Elliott Smith today?
No, I didn't listen to Elliott Smith today.
Okay.
I probably should have.
There's still some time left in the day.
I don't know. Yeah, it was a mildly bummer of a day, but things are looking up.
There we go. Yeah. Well, we're here. We're recording the podcast. You have all of your extremities, and you
that
have,
you know of.
Yeah, well, that I can see in front of me, and I can only hope that the other digits are still intact as well.
Fingers crossed.
Yes, God willing.
Hey, so today's episode. You know, oftentimes we'll talk, we'll do a show and we won't talk about the person who we named it after at all. I can tell you that was the case last week.
Yes.
With George the Animal Steel. Quite honestly, I didn't even bother naming it until after the show.
Well, I mean, it was very, very fitting because we were talking about grooming body hair.
Right. Well, that's why we chose George the Animal Steel. But I mean, what is there to say about George the Animal Steel? I guess he was a big backstage stooge.
Well, he had a green tongue. He used to eat turnbuckles.
I assume that he
was a very well-educated gentleman.
Was he educated? I assume that that he was sucking now and laters.
Yeah, it could have been now and laters. It could have been green food dye. But he...
That's probably the more obvious thing.
I believe that he actually was still teaching. I could be wrong on this, but I think he was a history teacher, much like how Tito Santana was a teacher while he was a wrestler as well.
Was he really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, Tito Santana. I just can't remember what teacher he was, but they were both in education.
Hmm. Oh, that's interesting. But either way, we didn't talk about him last week, but every now and then we do actually talk about the wrestler on some weeks. And today's episode is William Regal, who, man, if I'm making a Mount Rushmore.
Yep.
He most likely goes on it of a personal favorite.
Yes.
And there's a reason why I call people Sunshine. and he's most definitely it. I love me some William Regal.
I'm a huge William Regal fan as well.
Well, that's, it's interesting. I was a fan like years and years ago. Like I identified right away that there's something wildly different about this guy than every other wrestler. Now it's just that he was doing the, you know, sort of English hooking style and a lot of stretches where guys were doing big brute moves like jackknife power bombs. You know, he was pretzeling guys up.
Yes. Regal stretch.
Yeah. And not just that. I mean, he had a whole string of them. And then he was just very fluid in the ring.
Fucking hit people.
Yeah. I mean, I liked him right away when seemingly no one liked him. Now, I think most modern day pro wrestlers would say, like, he was a major influence.
Yes. And I believe that his influence definitely came to prominence within, I would say, the mid to late 2000s. Mm-hmm. Once tape trading became something that evolved from trading tapes to being able to get footage online.
Uh-huh.
And for the tape trading circles, I think that everyone always held Regal in a high regard. But once those tapes became accessible to a lot of people, I think that people started to really fully understand, like, oh, wow, this guy was actually amazing. I was watching a fan cam of him and Robbie Brookside before I came down here. And I have a collection of Regal tapes from very, very early on in his career. And the world of sports style we've talked about in depth before. And I think that the thing that made Regal really stand out in that style is that if you compare him to Johnny Saint, Johnny Saint was a magician, mm-hmm. right? So a lot of his escapism was, I don't want to say bullshit, but
not practical,
not practical
or illogical,
illogical and actual application, if that makes sense.
Sure.
There is a level of cooperation that goes along with some of the things that Johnny Saint would do, and it was a lot of sleight of hand, which was very impressive.
Right.
Whereas Regal was smash mouth.
Right.
And even in 1978, he was so brutal with his strikes. And then you go and you see him in WCW and the facial expressions, these overly comedic grimaces that he would put on, and then the in-ring action on top of that. Regal, I mean, he should be on a Mount Rushmore of greatest professional wrestlers of all time.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, like, he's clearly someone who gets it.
Yes.
You know, he's a great wrestler. And first of all, he was really the last bastion of English wrestling for a huge stretch of time.
Yes.
You know, there was no major promotions for the UK for a huge stretch. And the only exposure that most people would have to that style of wrestling was William Regal. I'm sure that it still took place in very, very small, like, independent promotions and stuff in Great Britain, but it was not something that you saw quite regularly, which is probably why I was attracted to it.
Yeah.
Because it's so technical.
Yes.
Yeah. But he seems to understand the industry about as good as anyone, in that, yes, he can wrestle, and yes, he can get serious and beat the shit out of somebody when he needs to. He also has an understanding of the show side of it.
Yes.
You know, he was not opposed to making himself look like an ass.
Not at all. And he actually really flourished I think even when he got into WWE.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
You know, the Tajiri William Regal stuff was a lot of fun. And I believe at one point Tajiri pissed in his tea. And there's this backstage segment of William Regal just making these crazy facial expressions after sipping piss tea.
Yes.
And it just really, really, when you talk about like the total package, he had everything that you could want in a pro wrestler. And I even remember kind of dialing back a little bit from the conversation. There was a period of time where I would tell people I really enjoy William Regal and like, oh, he's boring.
That's the craziest thing I've ever heard. Yep,
absolutely.
This is a guy that came out dressed as a showgirl.
Yes. Yes.
Had Rikishi's ass stuffed in his face or made out with Vince McMahon's butt cheeks.
Yep.
At this time is Lord Steven Regal. I'm certain he was watching with a great deal of interest that match involving World Television champ Ultimo Dragon. We'll get to that in a moment, but Sarah Ferguson very much in the news, the former Duchess of York. There's a rumor circulating, your lordship, that you've been spending some time with her, but obviously not money. Now she's doing tomato juice commercial.
It was like spending the night with a ripped out bloody fireplace. Now, the next pay-per-view, I get my chance, and it's about bloody time to get back what belongs to me, the world's television title, for the fourth time. You Americans don't seem to have a lot of luck with the Japanese, do you? You should have a bloody white cross on a white background for your flag, because you're all bloody cowards. If you can't beat that pathetic, woeful, bloody Japanese, whatever he is, then let it down to a real man to bring back to WCW what is rightfully ours. And I say ours because I'm the only bloody thing keeping this company together at the moment. Whether you like me or whether you don't, because I'm English, you xenophobic, miserable little toads, I will bring that belt back to WCW where it belongs. Now, Ultimo Dragon, put on your best pink mask and your nice pink tights and your pink gown and come and I'll bend you in bloody two, sunshine.
Thank you very much, Larvin. Steven Regal, one of your fans there. And says you're number one. It's Nitro. We're live on TNT. Don't go away.
And now this was during his WCW run that I would tell people, yeah, I really like Regal. And they're like, nah, I don't see it.
Right.
But, and even then, as many wrestlers back in the day did, struggling with quotation fingers demons.
Isn't that a fun catch-all?
Yes.
Hey, man, he's battling his demons.
Yes.
That could be heroin.
It could be a slew of things.
It could be alcohol. It could be women.
He could be playing Ghosts and Goblins on the Super Nintendo.
Bro, I'm battling demons every night in this room.
Yes. Yes. On a consistent basis, our heart is with you, sir.
That's right. Well, it's the only way I can get to sleep.
We shouldn't even go on to what those demons are.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, sometimes, you know, it helps me sleep. And yeah, sometimes I like to fight the demons one time in the morning because it helps me wake up, too.
I would rather hang out with the demons. They seem like a cool lot.
But, you know, it's interesting, though. Something I thought about, maybe I wonder if his willingness to be the butt of the joke, the patsy, or the, you know, he was the person willing to put over everyone, which is great.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's retired having never been the world champion of anything.
Never held a major title.
Right. And I wonder if that bothers you.
I don't know if it necessarily bothers me, and I don't think it even bothers him because he held himself accountable for his actions. Like, he's the first, he's gone on record to say, hey, you know, like, there's a reason why, and it was me. And he should be celebrated for his fighting of said demons, you know. And he was able to turn his life around. And I think that it would be upsetting if he seemed upset. But the fact that he doesn't seem very upset about it, lets me know, like, hey, you know, like, this is somebody that was very aware of the situations that he was in, and he held himself accountable. Like, I mean, like, I applaud people. It takes a different type of person to screw something up and then to be able to say, you want to know what? That was me. Like, especially
today. Yeah, but
he
wasn't trashed his entire career.
No.
You know, he had a pretty good run towards the end, actually.
Yeah.
And it would probably be the highest he would go.
The King of the Ring run?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, probably around about the same time, there was another person who was probably about that same level of importance on that WWE roster who was getting that world title push in JBL.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It just takes one person going, let's give that cat a go.
Yep.
You know, and he just never got it. But and the reason why I asked you the question is it important to win titles as an independent wrestler today? Because I think that his generation, sure, it's important, but I think he would be the first person to tell you that what's really important is the show.
Yes. And so this is actually a multi-level conversation because at the something that I have to tell the wrestling students at FSW.
Don't mark for yourself.
Not necessarily don't mark for yourself, but WWE is not going to hire you based on your win and loss record, and they're not going to hire you based on the championships that you've held.
Right.
However, and this is something that I am quickly discovering for myself right now, that I am currently one half of the Future Stars of Wrestling Tag Team Champions, along with Jacob Austin Young. Our stock value has risen. I'm being contacted by more promoters than I was before I was holding a championship. And
are you getting contacted to come to these promotions as a tag team?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right, go on.
Yes. And so, for instance, we're going out to Without a Cause, which is a promotion that runs in Washington that is, I'd say the big two when it comes to the Pacific Northwest scene right now. Like, there's Defy.
Right.
And there's also Without a Cause. I think there's one called 5CCW. West Coast Wrestling Connection, I'm sure, is still doing their thing, but it's not viewed as like a major company where they're bringing in like top tier indie talent mm-hmm. of today. They'll bring in former WWE guys from time to time. Right. And I used to wrestle for them. And so I think that you can put value in anything. And I think that at a major level, championships are important, especially if you are given main titles for the company.
Right.
Whether it's WWE, AEW, or the independents, if a promoter gives you a championship title, it's because they have faith in you being the head of the division that you were selected for. And they have enough faith in you to where you're going to put on consistent matches that are going to be of high quality.
Right.
And so, yes, unfortunately, as much as I don't want to admit, yeah, at an independent level, championships are important as long as they're from reputable companies. The companies have to be reputable, because if you win Backyard Oklahoma WWE replica Winged Eagle title, you know,
Oklahoma.
And, yeah, and you're...
We don't have to go that far away. Let's just stick to Oakland.
And then you carry around your WWE replica belt. You could just go and buy a WWE replica belt. That doesn't mean anything. So in some ways it does matter. In some ways it doesn't matter. I don't think that anyone should lose the sight of what you said before we started this was it's about the show. We'll be right back.
I think that when you really break down the modern fan wrestler dynamic, as opposed to years and years ago, kayfabe and all this sort of stuff, now fans want to see their favorites win a championship.
Yes.
Or be bestowed the championship. I mean, a lot of times people are happy if their favorite just gets a championship.
Yes.
Even if it means that they won it in a schmoz, like a money in the bank situation, which I'm blown away by, because anytime someone wins a money in the bank thing, I'm like, really? You should be that excited that you won a match with one move against an impaired person.
Right.
You know, that's evidence of how different I think of things other than the average fan. But they want to see their favorites have the title. That's why they can't wait to say you deserve it and all this sort of stuff.
Yes.
And, you know, wrestlers used to be about the show, the work, the putting on the program so that they can make the money and go home and, you know, keep steak in their belly instead of pork and beans.
Yes.
But now that fans are wrestlers instead of maybe meatheads.
Yes.
I have to imagine that the dynamic has changed in that maybe a little bit, probably not much, but just a little bit, in that it's less about the show and more about, in a short way of putting it, getting your shit in. Does
yes.
that make sense?
No, it does make sense. And there's a thought process of people that do stuff like that. And then there's people that are able to get their shit in within the parameters that are given to them.
Right.
And I've never lobbied for myself to win a championship, and I have held the tag team titles twice.
It's bad form to do that.
Yes. But there's people that do it. And right. I've held the No Limits Championship for Future Stars of Wrestling twice. And the thing that got me those championships was the amount of work that I put in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was also able to consistently produce in ring. And that is something that I feel like, even though the pen to the paper is what makes you the champion, I feel like there's a lot of people that actually do earn it, you know,
right.
And then there's some people in major companies that they may not earn it necessarily, but they think that they're going to be somebody that is going to draw them money.
Right.
And at the end of the day, there will be a point where this becomes about money for people. Right now,
well, it should be about money if
yes.
you want to keep the doors open.
Yes,
there's a lot of independent promotions out there.
Yes,
that look, they're not crushing it.
No,
I don't care how popular pro wrestling is right now. You know, if you're charging $20 a head and your place sits 100 people,
yep,
and you have a shit ton of people to pay, you know, what's the overhead here? What are you really walking out the door with?
Yes.
You know, so, you know, it's strange to me.
Yes. And that's the thing is that there is a apprenticeship period when you are training to where paying your dues, like learning your craft. I mean, if I was running a wrestling show and if I were to book students on the show, I would explain to them like, hey, like, this is to see if we can evaluate where we put you after this match. You know, does it mean that you need to go back in the oven, or does it mean that you're ready to put out on display? And if you're ready to put out on display, then you're going to cut your teeth a little bit, and then eventually we'll have a conversation about what I would be willing to give to you.
Right.
And ultimately, that's the negotiation process is different for everybody. So it's really hard to throw a blanket on it and say, this is exactly how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
But for myself, I struggled really hard in the beginning, and it took me a really long time until I got paid. It wasn't until I was about, I'd say 6 or 7 years in, that I actually started seeing money. So, but yet there's other
and
people.
Even then, that money, it's not steak money.
Right.
It's there, you can get by money.
There was a period of time it was steak money. like when I was wrestling for
Hotshot.
Yeah, Paragon Pro Wrestling and West Coast Wrestling Connection.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like my mom did my taxes. Right. Like my mom's always helped me with my taxes.
What a funny sentence. My mom did my taxes.
Right. So but the 2 years that I was making money, she was blown away. Right. Like she was shocked. And I'm very lucky to be able to say that I had those 2 years of making that type of money. But once again, it took me that long to make it. And then after I stopped making that type of money, I still made money.
Right.
But it was not nearly as much. And now I'm coming back into a wave to where it's coming back. So we're just trying to make sure.
It was enough for you to
quit my job.
Quit your day job.
Yes.
Which I don't know. What are we, a month or two out from that? How are things?
There's a lot of people that say that they want things, but they're not actually ready to commit. Mm-hmm. I've had people that have reached out to me for private lessons, and there's been a few that I've taught, and there's been a few that haven't been able to figure it out.
Figure it out in the ring.
Well, figure it out as far as showing up.
Wow.
To actually take the lesson. So that was one of those things that it's gotten better now. But the first month there was it was kind of shaky just because you're trying to figure out how to navigate it. But now that we're in the second month, it's a little bit easier. And there's, like I said, private lessons have been picking up a little bit. Mm-hmm. The last 2 weeks I haven't been able to do anything just because I just got back from Tennessee.
Right.
And then, I have Washington, and then November I'm blank, but I'm going to be filling those dates up with seminars. I will most likely be doing a seminar for Best of the West as well as the Oregon Wrestling School. And those are going to be, I'm looking forward to those. Those are going to be a lot of fun.
In your lessons, I wonder something I've noticed recently is that I don't think that element that William Regal has, that cartoonish element, that willingness to be the ass of the joke or maybe be a little bit more lighthearted. Like he had an interesting dynamic to him. He could be intensely serious.
Yes.
And switch to absolute preposterousness.
Yes.
I don't know if that's a word. But seemingly on a dime.
Yep.
I don't know if there's a whole lot of absolute preposterousness guys out there right now.
There's a few, and they exist in different territories. There is a gentleman that Dangerous Devin Dixon is a huge fan of named Luigi Primo.
Mm-hmm.
And Luigi Primo is a pizzeria dude that like literally comes out to the ring flipping pizzas, and then he flips them between his feet and spins them up and down in the sky, and it's incredible.
Well, look, I think that there are I didn't mean to cut off that guy's 2 seconds of fame here on Turnbuckle Boogie,
but he's gonna have 15 minutes of fame, baby. Luigi Primo is the future of the industry.
But that to me sounds like, just based on your description, something that's more of just almost a straight up comedy gimmick.
Yes.
There seem to be plenty of those.
Yes.
What I'm talking about is somewhere in the middle. People who can act in a way where you fear for the person standing across the ring from them.
Yep.
And also act in a way that causes you to laugh nervously.
And that's, so there's different types of baby faces and there's different types of heels.
But that's what I'm getting at. There are different types. But this one seems to be neglected in recent years. And it's there have been a slew over the past 10 years with the success of Japanese wrestling in America.
Yep.
I was going to say European wrestling, but they're fucking goofy beyond belief.
Oh yeah.
I lost my train of thought. There have been a lot of... Oh, Ring of Honor was what I was going to say.
Yes.
The explosion of Ring of Honor and how their talent are now sort of the... But a lot of...
Well, Dalton Castle had a little bit of ridiculous to him with the boys.
That's a good example.
You know, and I mean...
That even, he's a perfect example of what I'm talking about.
Yes.
A guy who can get it done in the ring, but is flashy and entertaining enough, and not just because he's dressed as a human peacock.
Yes.
But because of how he talks.
Yes.
You know, he's a great example. He might be today's William Regal.
Yes.
Minus the artistic stretch skills. I know he has legitimate stretch skills.
Well, look at MJF too. So mm-hmm. you do have a few people, but not everyone is going to be fit into those roles. However, there is an importance. I just got done doing Chicken Shit Hill.
Explain whatever that is that you just said.
So
it sounds like a terrible Vietnam movie.
Yeah. So I just got done playing a Chicken Shit Hill in the match that I had with Dangerous Devin Dixon.
Chicken Shit
Heel.
Heel.
I was saying a bit too fast.
Not Chicken Shit Hill.
Hill. Yeah.
Chicken Shit. The sequel to Heel. Hamburger Hill.
Yes. But I just got done doing that in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And we, this episode is about William Regal, and we've already talked about Southern wrestling.
Not exclusively.
Professional wrestling is real in the South.
Yeah.
Professional wrestling is very real in the South. I had the absolute time of my fucking life, and it ended up being a situation to where I didn't know who I was going to be wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And
who
it
did
was,
you wrestle?
I wrestled Dangerous Devin Dixon.
Oh, I see.
So Dangerous Devin Dixon's opponent was not able to make it to the show. So the promoter decided to put me and him against each other. And Silas Mason, who was outside on with his cane, was ringside for Devin. And the gentleman that put the show together, Danny Vegas, I had to talk into him sticking around and accompanying me ringside so we could do all of the
this, cartoonish
yes.
chicken shit spots.
Yes. And oh,
this is a side of you. Look, if you would have told me, hey, buddy, I'm going to go play a chicken shit heel, I'm going to have a manager and the whole shit, I would have been like, hold on, let me get plane tickets.
Yes.
Because I would have flew across the fucking country to watch this shit.
Well, hopefully the footage is available because it was... the crowd came unglued. And that's also something that I should bring up is that different rooms are going to react to different things.
Of course.
And you're going to have your... crowd that wants to chant "This is awesome" and fight forever, and then you're going to have your crowds that are going to want to see blood and guts.
Sure.
And then you're going to have your crowds that are going to want to see some flippy doos.
What does Tennessee crowds want?
They want to see good guys beat the living dog shit out of bad guys.
Wow.
That's what they want to see. And
is it like stepping into a time machine for you?
It wasn't even like stepping into a time machine, but it was like being on a different planet. And I have a love for Southern wrestling. I really do. And I oftentimes pitch these spots to people in matches because right. I've watched Midnight Express do them and I've watched, you know, PG-13 do them. And I it very rarely gets across. Because everyone's like, oh, well, that's hokey. But I didn't have to worry about what was hokey in that match. Dangerous Devin Dixon gave me a splash in the corner, and I fed out, and he blew on me to knock me over.
I'm in the late autumn of my 30-year career, and recently I've been pondering over the legacy of William Regal. What's it all been about? I'm a vicious and sadistic and spiteful fighter. I've been a unique entertainer. I never achieved the one thing that I coveted the most, and that was to become the world heavyweight champion. But that's my fault, because I have a wonderful knack of getting myself into a lot of trouble. But to the people who really know, I've always been a second to none world-class technical wrestler. That was until Antonio Cesaro came along. Because I know, even on my best day, he's 10 times the man and the wrestler that I've ever been. And he knows that. And that's what this is really all about. He has an intense desire to prove it. And I truly commend him for it. I'm going into this match knowing that the only chance I've got of surviving, let alone winning, is a miracle. And that's not coming to a faithless old villain like myself. I'm not worried or scared of my plight. In fact, I'm relishing the thought. I am going to compete with every drop of violent venom that I've got left. And if this is the end, well, I honestly can't think of a more noble way to go than being beaten by the ultimate competitor.
All right. Okay. Has it ever occurred to you or anyone else in the industry to have a full-blown alter ego across, I don't know, the Mason-Dixon line, so to speak? Like,
yes.
Hey, people over here, they're not going to see the shit that I do in Vegas, so I'm going to throw on a luchador mask and speak a bunch of Spanish gibberish.
Yeah, and there are some people that do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one thing that I will credit Sin Bodhi with is that I think that something that really helped me is that when they were doing the freak show wrestling events, mm-hmm. where you end up, I wrestled as my great-great-great-grandfather one time.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
I wrestled as Wonder If It's a Woman. Yes. And it
very
was
time sensitive.
Yes,
folks.
And it was just me in a Wonder Woman outfit.
Yes.
And I had my beard, no makeup, and I was just wearing a wig. Like, that's all that it was.
All right.
And then I had a character named Daniel Foster that was a takeoff of, do you remember in Billy Madison when Adam Sandler's character is calling all the people that he was an asshole to in high school?
Yes. And you were Steve Buscemi.
Yep, so, but it was a combination of Steve Buscemi with Michael Douglas's character from Falling Down.
Nice.
So, sure. And I would come to the ring in a button up with a tie and a briefcase, and I would take a really big, deep sigh. And then I would slowly walk to the ring, shaking every single person's hand.
Okay.
Just awkwardly shaking people's hands. And then I would get thumped by some monster heel.
Yes.
And I would roll out of the ring, and then I would get upset. And then what would comfort me was putting on lipstick. And then I would put on the lipstick, and I would slide back in the ring, get a little bit more, and then I would just get thumped even worse.
Yeah.
And then I would slide underneath the ring. Originally, I had an idea for a gimmick called Mr. Torture. And the whole entire idea...
This is a stupid name.
Now, it's a stupid name based off an amazing song from Halloween.
It sounds like a Batman villain.
Yes. So, Halloween, if you're not familiar with them, they're a metal band, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a song called Mr. Torture. I'm not going to embarrass anybody by trying to sing the lyrics.
One and a two and a...
Yeah. But Mr. Torture sells pain to the housewives in Spain. He knows just what they crave, Mr. Torture. If you're feeling alone, then just pick up your phone, dial 9555, Mr. Torture. Mr. Torture sells pain. So,
hold on.
Yes.
I want to absorb this poetry.
Yes. So... So my idea for Mr. Torture was that I would have an S&M mask and I would wear a business suit,
mm-hmm.
and I would like stand prim and proper. And then an interviewer would interview me about an upcoming match. And then I would have the zipper closed on the mouth. So I'd be mumbling.
Oh, this is like a gimp deal.
Yes. And then the interviewer would unzip the zipper and I would have the gag ball in and I would still be mumbling. And so... So Sin Bodhi condensed this idea, and he is like, well, maybe instead of Mr. Torture from Halloween, what if we play Nine Inch Nails Closer?
Mm-hmm.
And then so Nine Inch Nails Closer would hit, and then I would come out from underneath the ring wearing the Gimp mask, and then I would blow my comeback.
It's got to be a better word to use than blow.
Absolutely not. I would blow my comeback.
Yeah.
And by doing different characters like that,
mm-hmm.
and having the opportunity to know how do I portray what I'm trying to get across to the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, and I will say that that was a huge benefit because I can be a vicious heel.
Right.
I can be a chicken shit heel. Right. I can be a cocky heel. I can be a white meat, come on, baby, baby face. Right. I can be a punching bag, or I can be a technical lizard if I wanted to be.
Sure.
You know, like I can, and it's important because there's some people that don't even know how to work heel.
Yes.
Let alone work different versions of heel.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, you know, you have, but here's the point. You only have one gear bag.
Yes.
And it's got one set of gear in it.
Well, I've got two sets now.
All right. So the different colors are the same shit.
Yes.
What I'm saying is, let's say I was a wrestler. I got my fucking badass, I kick ass, baby face, all black gear.
Yep.
With the you know, black wrist tape and all this sort of stuff.
Yep.
You know, the laces on the boots are black. Everything's black.
All black, everything.
That's right. This guy looks like he beats people up.
Yes.
Good grief. And then I also have my neon colored LeMay printed long tights.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe some sort of spray where it can kind of bleach your hair a little bit, but not permanently.
Yes.
You know, and then I got my my Ric Flair gimmick. And you can call me up and I'd say, which one do you want?
Yeah.
Which role do you need?
Right. And then, like, I'll normally, like, if I go to a new place, I'll ask them what they need. You know, I'm like, what do you need tonight? Okay, well, this is what we need. And it's like, okay, no problem. And
yeah, but the problem is you are, like a lot of modern day wrestlers, cool, right?
Yeah.
Very striking jawline and a shaved head.
Aww.
With a cool black gear, with the black boots. Yeah. And I'm sure there's a black elbow pad in there somewhere.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
The elbow pads to protect people from my elbows because I fucking throw those things.
They're not going to call you up after seeing your picture and your tape or whatever, your highlight reel, and go, we need a supermodel Rick Martel.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
They're just not going to ask that.
No.
They might say, hey, can you be a chicken shit? And you'll go, yeah, sure. But it's not going to have the pronounced effect that it would if you had an entirely different gimmick.
Like when, there's an aspect that I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's the diversity and the ability of just being able to be Cody Hancock.
Sure.
Is because Cody Hancock can be whatever I want to be whenever I want to be it.
Right.
So, and this is also more reasoning behind why I just wrestle as me now. And that's something that has helped me. Like,
I don't know, as far as your Vegas tenure goes, I don't know that you've ever technically been anything other than yourself. Even in the crash test Cody days, you were who you were.
Yes.
Then switching to following era Cutthroat Cody and all the variations of Cutthroat Cody over the years. You were always yourself, but the modern day difference is, hey, now I use my last name. I'm not just the three words.
The only difference was when I was doing the Order of Illumination and I had a satanic cult. Like, that was
character.
I'm into that shit.
It may be all character, but you're also, really into that stuff.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Did you ever read the Satanic Bible?
Yes. Like, I actually would, I would pull passages from the Satanic Bible.
Can I give my book report on the Satanic Bible real quick?
Yes.
I got to tell you, for people who don't know, who think, like, when they hear the word Satan, they go, oh, that's bad.
Yes.
Obviously, we have thousands of years of history of knowing that the Lord of the Underworld is a bad figure.
Yeah.
A paganistic, evil, rotten human being. Hey, read the Satanic Bible. It starts out kind of nice. Starts yes. out like the real Bible. You know, it's about, you know, treating yourself and the people around you with love and affection and care. You know, these are great things to live your life by.
Yep.
You know, the modern day Satanist is not what you think it is. Now, that's page 1 through 3. On page 4 is a magic spell to get chicks to fall in love with your wiener.
Yes. Yes.
Page 5, and I think this is the most redundant page, is a magic spell to get dudes to fall in love with your cooch. I mean, you don't even need this page. You might as well tear it out.
He's a man, such a man,
such a man.
He's a real man's man. He's a man, such a man,
such a man.
Well, and that was something that I also pulled quotes from Hellraiser.
Sure.
And then
what about that one horror movie with the floating balls that had daggers and shit? They were like little
Phantasm, man.
Yeah, they were like little. It was like a little silver ball.
Yes.
And it was almost like a Swiss Army knife. It would have just wacky shit come out of it at all times. It'd go into your mouth and cut through your brains or whatever.
They have, like, I think 3 or 4 Phantasm movies. I loved those movies when I was growing up.
Hey, you want to know a little fun fact about me? Sorry, folks. We're pre-Halloween here, but you're hearing it post-Halloween. When I was a kid, I happened to catch the end of a movie called... Critters, no,
yeah.
Ghoulies 2.
Yes.
Now, if you remember,
I know both of those.
Critters was these little furry, they almost look like Sonic the Hedgehog, really.
Yes.
With a lot of teeth. Ghoulies were little stop motion animation puppets.
Yep.
And they were all different. And there was one who was green and bald headed. He looked like Mills Lane. And his gimmick was, apparently, I think, because like on all the posters, it would show him peeking out of a toilet.
Yes.
His gimmick was he would go in a toilet and it would he would bite you, I don't know, the dick, the balls, the ass, the clitoris,
whatever
I don't know,
was available.
Whatever was available. And I don't know what it is that they were. So anyway, the ending, I caught the ending of Ghoulies 2 as a... a very, very young me. And a guy is like, oh, I got to take a shit or whatever. And he's rushing and he doesn't look in the toilet. And it showed the little guy ducking down into the toilet like, ah. And then it cuts to a exhibition shot of the outside. You hear like chomp and he's, ah, whatever. I don't know what they were trying to insinuate. Did he bite off his dick and balls or on the ass cheek? That seems less dangerous.
Well, I mean... the world can never know.
Well, you have to let your imagination fill in the gaps. The point is, I caught this as a young person, probably like 8 years old. I did not sit ass cheeks to toilet seat for 4 years.
Yes. Yes. I remember.
This is why I don't watch horror movies. And I don't mean to cut you off. I'm going to finish this thought. The funny part is how I weaned myself off of this bad habit where I squatted over the toilet every time I had to go twosies.
How?
So I'd go over to my buddy Dave's house, you know, we'd be hanging out and I'd be like, oh, I got the, I don't know, I had some bad Taco Bell. I got to hit the can.
Yep.
And then I'd be in there doing the squat and I go, you know what? that little green guy, you know, this is about a mile away. He's probably still going through the sewer system. I could probably sit down and be fine. You know, so then I
talked yourself into it.
Correct. And then next time when I was at my house, it's like, you know what? He's probably still on his way to Dave's house.
Yes.
That's
yes.
how I weaned myself off of this 4-year bad habit of squatting.
You just have to end up going to a different bathroom like every other day. So it's just, he's constantly just in transit trying to eat your nutsack.
That's right. He's like, and he's always disappointed. He showed up over to Dave's house going, God, I'm hungry for nuts. Ah, shucks. T's not here.
Yep. Exactly. There was a movie called The Stuff that kept me from eating yogurt for probably a good 2 years because I saw that movie when I was a kid and it freaked me out.
The movie was called The Stuff?
The movie was called The Stuff, and it was more or less a cheesy takeoff of The Blob where they end up...
The Stuff!
Yeah, they end up finding this mysterious... delicious liquid from an asteroid or some shit, and it ends up turning people into like terrible grotesque monsters to where like white shit is pouring out of all the orifices in their face and,
wow, yeah, tear ducts, that's all, never good when stuff comes out of your tear ducts that's not tears.
Yep,
never good,
bad business. But yeah, that movie got me. I didn't eat yogurt for 2 years.
I was gonna ask you, I mean, in your personal opinion, do you think it's something, I mean, is there only so much you can teach? Do you think you have to have that, I hate to use the word X factor, but, you know, do you believe in that?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it takes some people longer than others. You know, it takes some people a long time, but that's one of my things, that they trust me. I seem to have a way of spotting that in people, and it may be 2-3 years with this fella. This fella, if he's not got it in 6 months, he's never going to get it. And we don't hold anybody to that, but it usually works out. There's a few people around that seem to have that. And it usually works. You know, some people just will never get this. Some people, they get successful despite themselves. They can do everything wrong, but people like them anyway. And that's all it really is. It's making a connection with your audience. It doesn't matter how good you are. It's got nothing to do with, you know, it's... how technically good you are, or it's got absolutely nothing to do with it. It's whether you can make a connection with your audience. And in music business, there's some rotten singers out there that sell out arenas, right? Yeah, yeah. And there's some incredible ones that can't put 500 people in a club. So, it's something special.
So that connection with an audience, I'll be remiss not to ask you about Daniel Bryan.
Yes.
Who is just obviously a phenomenal wrestler. At the core of it, that seems to have come out of nowhere. What do you think is the sort of secret behind that? Why has that happened? Because I know you're very close to Daniel.
Yes, there's no secret to that. From day one, that was what I saw in him. And Shawn Michaels, I didn't train him. I trained with him. Shawn Michaels trained him. Shawn Michaels saw that in him from day one. I saw it from the day I met him 13 years ago. And so I did everything I could to be able to bring that out of him, which was... send him to England. I sent him. He worked on the Butlins camps for 3 or 4 years there.
Did he do Butlins?
Yes, yeah. And because I knew that'd be a great place for him to be able to go out. And you've got a captive audience of 1,000 children, right? If you can't make them scream and shout and learn how to play with their emotions, you're not going to get to this level. Yeah. So I sent him there. I sent him there. Robbie Brookside's there. I wanted him to train with him. Got him into Japan. And then he took out, you know, his own career. Sort of people started wanting him different places. He sort of took everything and made it work for him. And against circumstances that, you know, he's 5'8", and he's bigger now, but he used to be 180 pounds. He just had that magic from day one, you know, because you see a lot of people come along and it's not about him, it's got nothing to do with him being a great wrestler. That's a bonus. Everything he's got is a bonus on top of the initial thing that he had, that was that something.
Very much like a kind of young Shawn Michaels, isn't he? And the fact that he's not the biggest guy, but he's a great character, and as you say, he's an incredible wrestler as well. He's got the whole package.
It's all a bonus, yeah. I mean, this job starts from the second you walk through the curtain. Yeah. If people don't believe in you and you don't believe in yourself, that's the end of it. And so he always had that about him, and he always had that presence about him. Some people have that. And the rest of it has just worked, and, you know, it took him a while to get here. He used to call me all the time. Every single week we spoke before he came back here. And are you working on this? Are you working on that? Are you working on your promo skills? Are you working on... what happens if they want you to be an entertainer? You know, you just got to entertain. that's why he was, and yeah, he was happy to do it. So I knew he could do it all. All he needed was the opening. And he's some people talk such rubbish. There's never a time since he's been back in this company that he's not been featured in something. And people think he's being held down. But if you actually go back and look at his career, he's had a great position the whole time he's been here. And that's because he's very good at what he does. But it's from the second he walks through that curtain, people believe in him. And you can't buy that, you can't teach that. You've got to have that belief in yourself and that kind of attitude that you're going to succeed.
Switching subjects. Something I've noticed recently is, and I'm sure it's obvious to a lot of other people, but, you know, growing up, I think it was understood that the WWE was a babyface territory.
Yes.
You know, Hulk Hogan was the champ. He'd come out and beat whoever the big bad guy was. And, you know, the good guy was the champion forever. And WCW was the heel territory.
Yes.
You know, a lot of the actual old territories, the proper territories, they were all heel territories because the booking concept was to have your top babyface, we'll say Jerry Lawler, he's constantly, you know, fighting to get to the top, but something always keeps him down.
Yeah.
You know, but recently things have kind of changed. And the WWE, with exceptions, seems to be the heel territory now.
Yes.
With Roman Reigns, you know, Sasha, no, I'm sorry, not Sasha Banks, but Becky Lynch, Charlotte. Like, I think the majority of their champions are all bad guys.
Yep.
And when you look to AEW, with exceptions, because, you know, Kenny Omega is tentatively a heel, although yes. I don't know that anybody actually hates him, the majority of their guys are babyfaces.
Jim Cornette definitely hates him.
Well, not to tie myself to old Corny, but, you know, I don't hate him, but I'm just not a fan.
I finally figured it out.
Did you?
Yeah. Mm. I know what he's doing. I'm not saying that I like what he's doing. I just know what he's doing.
That you don't care for?
Yeah.
And you're not going to say it?
No, I'm going to.
Okay, go ahead.
So, you know these, like, really, really goofy mannerisms?
Sure.
They're from animes.
They're also from a lot of video games. A lot of his poses and postures and shit that people go, why is this idiot acting like this?
It's
because this motherfucker plays Street Fighter Alpha 3.
Right.
It became who he is. Whatever, that's fine. Except for that the average American has no idea what the fuck is going on.
And I think that that's the thing is that there was one pose that he did, and I can't remember what anime it was from, but it just brought this image in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see the silhouette. And so now I can understand why.
Well, when he holds the one hand up, when he's pointing the fake finger gun.
Yes.
I mean, that's legit from whatever Street Fighter.
Yeah, probably Street Fighter V.
I forget what the character is. No, Street Fighter V is a modern one. And well, but he likes this sort of...
The name V-Trigger?
Right.
That comes from Street Fighter V.
I'm aware
of
that. Actually, I don't know if it came from Street Fighter V, wasn't it? In one of the alphas or anything before that?
No.
Came up with the V-Trigger?
Yes, V-Trigger was like a specific, like...
Explain the V-Trigger to the folks out there. Sorry, I'm doing my Norm MacDonald bit. Explain Street Fighter to the folks.
It's like a specific type of special attack that you can do.
Basically, you have a little meter underneath your guy, folks.
Yes.
Imagine this game is a tournament fighter.
Yes.
And then it's one guy versus one guy, and you have a little meter. You have a health meter at the top, but on the bottom, you have another meter. This is your V-trigger meter.
Yes.
I don't know if they call it that. But if you get your ass kicked enough, it fills up.
Right. So there's a special meter.
And then you do your big move, the V-trigger.
Well, in Street Fighter, there's like four different bars now. Which is what makes it confusing, right? Because
it's confusing, but you know what? If you've ever played any of them, like, you know,
you can figure it out.
I played the shit at a Street Fighter 2 and all the variations of Street Fighter 2.
Mm-hmm.
When Street Fighter 5 came out, I picked it up having not played in, I don't know how many, a decade plus.
Yeah.
And was as good as I ever was.
That's awesome. I remember Street Fighter 4 because I actually admittingly have not played 3. Mm-hmm. Because it's just a way for Capcom to take more money from me than I'm willing to give them. Street Fighter 4, though, I enjoyed because Zangief's grapple range in that game is just ridiculous.
Right.
Big fan.
So back to the point at hand. Babyface territories
and heel territories.
What do you think?
I think you can go either or, and I think there's periods of time where you can cycle. You know, I think that there's the benefit of having a heel territory is that you have everybody wants to buy the ticket to see Ric Flair get beat, right? Everybody wants to buy the ticket to see Roman Reigns get beat. Even when Brock Lesnar was WWE champion during his heel run on his return when he was sponsored by Jimmy John's.
I think people just wanted to see Brock Lesnar because they knew serious shit was about ready to happen.
Right. But there were people that didn't... The majority of WWE fans, mm-hmm. their plight with Lesnar was, he's a part-timer.
Not the majority. I don't think so.
Well, the everyone that I was around that complained about it, that's the things that they complained about.
Yeah, but you hang around with nothing but marks and wrestlers.
Yeah. And I mean, being in the industry, that's exactly what I should be hanging out with, right? So
is it? Yeah. I don't know. I think a good palate cleanser would be meeting a casual person off the street.
No. Casual people off the street don't do very well for me. Yeah, I've got my gym people, I've got my wrestling people, mm-hmm. you know, but that's the community that I'm immersed in.
Sure.
And you know, there are people that I talk to outside of the realm, but then also to the benefit of having a babyface territory is that you're going to sell some merchandise, right? Because everyone loves to see their favorite wrestler, and that's the dichotomy, you know, like, and there's fans that love heels, you know, more than they love baby faces, which that's when you get the let's go Cena Chucks.
Yes. Yeah, sucks chance. Cena does Chuck.
Yes. Up Chuck. he wears Chucks from time to time, I'm sure. But yeah, man.
Yeah, like, I wonder what happened to that guy. I hope he landed on his feet.
I'm sure he did. Right. I'm sure he's doing very well for himself. His movie career is already exceeding Hulk Hogan's. So he's doing good. But yeah.
Yeah, but he has a leg up. Let's be real.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a skullet.
Yes.
And hot dog skin.
It's a very true statement.
You know, the odds of him, you know, losing 30 pounds and looking like an average human being were way up there.
Yes. Yes.
Having said that, if you ask me who would I want to see in a wrestling match, John Cena or Hulk Hogan, I think I'm going to go Hulk Hogan. I know I'm going to go Hulk Hogan every time. I don't care if he's a babyface or a heel.
Really?
Hell yeah.
There you go.
I don't think I ever, the only time when I finally came around on John Cena, like literally, was when he was the U.S. championship.
Yeah.
Let's be real. Fans, they want to see good things happen to the people that they like. But if they don't happen organically, it really fucks things up. And there's a process of making things happen organically. You know, that's why they have those secondary titles. You know, what's the point of having fucking 10 titles if you're not going to have a guy, go from being a U.S. champ to a North American champ to an intercontinental champ and then the world?
Right.
If he is just a green ass rookie one day and then he's the world champ the next, boo!
Yeah.
We've seen it time and time again with a plethora of characters.
Right.
And it happened with John Cena. Sure, he was the U.S. champ for a minute, just enough to ruin the title.
Right.
And then right up to the big picture.
I see it a little bit differently than that.
Go ahead.
I see that he came onto the scene as vanilla ice cream. You can't even call him vanilla bean. Like, because there wasn't any specks of color in him. He was just, here's John Cena wearing a pair of spandex of whatever sports team color he's going to go out with. And then
great shape, though.
Yeah, oh, fantastic shape. And then you have the white rapper era, mm-hmm. which, once again, when I was a mark, and I fucking hate this guy.
What do you mean was?
Right. Precisely. But like, oh, I fucking hate this guy. Right. Mm. And I was supposed to hate this guy. It was by design. And he did so well in his role as a heel that when they turned him face, I don't think that they gave him the proper amount of time in order to do so.
Right.
And it also
supporting what I'm talking about.
Well, but what you're saying is that this guy that was green by the
time. I didn't say he was green. He showed up perfectly capable of handling himself. He may not have been Mr. I'm sure he would not put on a 5-star classic when he came in, but he was perfectly capable of putting on a match.
Right.
You know. I don't think you technically have to be some sort of Bret Hart in the main event if you draw money.
Right.
You know, it's just that he did not organically get over, I feel, intermittently, in stages.
Well, but there could also be the agreeance of they didn't transfer him out of his heel role properly.
Mm-hmm.
And then also welcome to the new age of, we all know what's going on in the business now, and we know that we can hijack a show and we're going to do it. Because the reason why John Cena was on the top for so long was because little kids bought his merchandise.
Right.
And 35-year-old neckbeards were the ones, Cena sucks. We're gonna make Cena suck like signs and shirts. And
you don't have to tell me. I mean, I never did any of that shit.
Right.
Whenever John Cena came out, I sat on my thumbs.
Right.
And it wasn't out of some sort of protest. I just found him to be boring as fuck.
Right.
You know, he was clearly not for my demographic.
Right.
You know, it was blatantly obvious, this guy coming out with neon colored clothes. Like, look, I'm not for anymore, you know, this modern day Ultimate Warrior character.
Right.
It's not for me, but I'm not going to be an obnoxious dick and be like, boo, you suck, blah, 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 blah. No, well, kids out there like you, fine, but I'm not going to fucking get upset about it.
Thank you for your coof. Right. But, you know, but at the same time, you are one person, and there's...
Oh, I'm aware, because like I said, I don't know, towards the beginning of when we first started the show, my sister bought me a ticket for a birthday once for a house show. And she gave it to me. I was like, oh, wow, thanks. She goes, yeah, let's go boo John Cena. And I was like, no,
yeah,
I ain't doing that shit. You could boo whoever the fuck you want. I want to go see Bray Wyatt.
Right. And that's the thing is that we live in a day and age now to where, and you know, hats off to Cesaro, because if you remember, the beach ball thing was happening pretty frequently at the time. And then there was that event where he was teaming with, I think, Sheamus, and he was on the ring apron waiting for the tag. And I think Seth Rollins was on the opposite side of that match. And like out of nowhere, Cesaro just hops in the crowd, grabs the beach ball, and tears it in half, right? So I personally feel like that's the disadvantage to anything in nerd culture, right? Mm-hmm. And we're talking about pop nerd culture. You're talking about comic books. You're talking about video games. You're talking about wrestling. You're talking about all these things. The major issue is that everyone thinks that they're a gatekeeper, right? I'm like, oh, well, you don't actually know enough about this subject that I do. And, you know, like, oh, well, I don't like your opinion because I think my opinion is better than yours. And I'm going to tell you who I think is better than yours. Like, and that has been plaguing like professional wrestling for a very long time.
Plaguing professional wrestling. It's plaguing modern society.
Yes.
It's not something exclusive to pro wrestling, but yes, entitlement and the self-importance is a problem in pro wrestling. And there's just a certain amount of obnoxious selfishness. You know, the idea of not hijacking a show. Like I said, you know, I've been to some shows and I've sat in the crowd and somebody within spitting distance of me is saying really stupid funny shit because this guy thinks he's fucking hysterical.
Yeah.
And I, you know, if I had anything in me, I'd tackle him and throw him out myself.
Yep.
Just because. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Just because you know a wrestler's real name or if you know the gimmick of a wrestler before they were that gimmick doesn't mean they have to scream it at him.
Jesus yep. Christ. And hey, Husky Harris.
Yep.
Shut up, dude. Yep. What are you doing? You're yep. ruining my good time.
Yeah, man. And that's one of those things that I think that going back to the to answer the question, I think that you can cycle territories. I think that there's a period of time where you can have a heel on top, and I think there's a period of time where you can have a babyface on top. Because if you have heel number one drop the babyface number one, and then babyface has a really good run, but then all of a sudden here comes heel number two, makes life hard for that babyface, and then maybe you continue to elevate that babyface, and then you eventually cycle out that babyface, and then you bring in a new babyface. You know, I think there's moments in time where you can switch. Mm-hmm. And I think for right now, the business model that WWE is following is successful for them because Roman Reigns as a heel is everything that it needs to be, right? They're hitting high marks on his run as a champion.
Sure.
Can't speak much for anybody else in the company right
well,
now.
Well, that is in fact the problem, is it not? Because yep. when you have a heel territory, that heel historically was oftentimes someone who was very beatable, who, you know, he was constantly in jeopardy of losing the title, and he just made it out the other end, just barely. They do like, you know, like Ric Flair would go around the country to the various territories, and he wouldn't have a match, but he would get the local babyface, and he'd go, you know what, you seem like a good kid. I'll tell you what, let's have ourselves a little collegiate rules, a little 5-minute or 3-minute exchange.
Yep.
You know, and he'd be all cocky or whatever. And then, you know, who's the Hands of Stone guy?
Ronnie Garvin.
Thank you. Ronnie Garvin would be like, all right, I'll take that challenge. And then, you know, Ric Flair would be showing off doing the sit outs and all this sort of stuff. And then all of a sudden Garvin would pin his shoulders to the mat just for a second.
Yep.
And that would be enough for the crowd to pop. And because Ric Flair would sell it like he was shot out of a cannon. Mm-hmm. He would sit up on his ass and start bouncing. Ah!
Yep.
You know, this guy got the better of me. And then they would go, these two are going to have an actual match 1 month from today.
Yep.
And that place would sell out faster and shit. Roman Reigns has officially is officially a bulletproof character. He's the heel of their company. I don't know how much children's merchandise they're selling.
Right.
But name one person you think could get into the ring with that character and supposedly win.
Right now?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the problem. When you get to a point where Brock Lesnar is putting you over, that territory is done.
Turnbuckle Boogie is a Devo Looter production and is produced by Timothy Styles and Cody Hancock, with web production and music provided by Timothy Styles. For more information, go to turnbuckleboogie.com. And for booking information on Cutthroat Cody Hancock, go to cutthroatcody.com. See you next Monday.